A rope hung suspended from the rafters, a noose knotted at its end. Sean's anguished sobs echoed through the cold air. This was not good. Not good at all.
Shh,
Lottie said, standing still on the stairs in the hallway.
I said nothing,
said Kirby.
Shut up and listen.
They listened.
I thought I heard a scream.
I heard nothing, Kirby said. A noise boomed down towards them.
It's only a door banging.
Lottie ran up the stairs, two steps at a time. No, before that, I heard a scream.
There's someone here.
Sure, we know there's someone here. The flashing light told us that.
Kirby, shut up.
At the top of the stairs, she looked along the corridor. She could see nothing in the darkness. No movement, no sounds. Only Kirby's laboured breathing from the exertion. Singing.
I hear singing or chanting or something,
Lottie whispered.
With all due respect, Inspector, I think you're hearing things.
Kirby stopped to catch his breath. Flinging him a filthy look, Lottie crept along in the direction of the sound. Maybe she was imagining it. Maybe not. She was going to find out, with or without Kirby.
Wait for me,
he said, his body struggling to keep up with his voice. She sighed, wishing for the 100th time she had Boyd behind her, not Kirby. Sean's hands were still tied. The madman unbound Jason and careered him ahead. The boy stumbled towards the altar, fell, and the crack of his skull against a marble sent a shockwave through him. Shoved into the front wooden pew, he tried not to think of his pain. He looked around. There had to be an exit, an escape route. At least he'd stopped crying. He needed to be in control. That's what his mam preached about her job. Be in control of the situation. The chapel was a warren of alcoves and wooden confessionals. He couldn't see an exit door. He had to take the man out. But he had no way of overpowering him with his hands tied.
Think fast.
His brain was blank. His breathing quickened as suffocating terror built up in his chest. He tried to still his breaths to a slow, even pace. He tried counting them. He couldn't. They tumbled out of his mouth, one on top of the other, until his eyes watered and snot ran down his nose. He allowed himself a glance towards the altar, and knew at once he shouldn't have. All the virtual games in the world couldn't have prepared him for the scene being played out before his eyes. Bile rose in his throat, and he was sure he would be sick. The man was looking straight at him, a curved, upturned crest of pale lips, eyes reflecting the candlelight, and his hair streaked damp against his scalp. He'd looped a rope around unconscious Jason's neck, deft fingers tightening the noose. Sean watched as he untied the end of the rope from the front pew and pulled, hoisting Jason into the air. He restarted his chanting, low and laboured as he heaved him upwards. Sean looked away, stifling vomit in his throat.
Out. He had to get out.
When the soles of Jason's feet were free from the ground, the madman tied the rope around the pew, tugged it secure, and his incantations intensified. Lottie tracked with her hands, up and down, all over the wall at the end of the corridor. Kirby tried too.
It's definitely chanting. Coming from here. But I can't see a door, she said. There's no way through, he panted. There has to be. This is where I saw the lights, the windows.
She realized she couldn't have seen anything from this location. It was the end of the corridor. She mentally conjured up the number of windows again. She ran frantically along the length of the corridor and back again, counting. She remembered Rickard's plans and the odd sequence of windows. There's a room blocked off, she said. She tried the door beside her. Locked. Kirby shouldered it, and it splintered open. She stepped in. To her right, three windows. She shone her phone light around and saw a second door.
This is it, she whispered to Kirby.
The scent of burning candles wafted towards her when she turned the handle. A flickering light highlighted a stone staircase. Turning to Kirby, she placed a finger to her lips. Creeping silently forward, she peered over the banister into the pit below. Lottie stifled a scream. Kirby placed a hand on her shoulder.
What am I looking at? He whispered.
Madness, Lottie said, as she watched the man she knew pull a noose around Jason Ricard's neck. And then she saw her son. Chapter 106. Sean heard a noise at the top of the stairs. He froze. Someone else was here. He tried not to look around. Didn't want to do anything that might warn the murdering bastard, but instinctively he turned his head and stared straight up into his mother's wide-eyed terror. A strangled whimper escaped his throat. The man turned and also looked up. His mother tore down the stairs and Sean knew this might be his only chance. Ignoring his oozing wound, he charged out of the seat towards the altar. Unbalanced with his hands bound, he stumbled and fell. Rather than loosening his grip on the rope, the man tightened it. Jason's eyes bulged as he began to strangle. Scrambling to his feet, Sean aimed his shoulder at the man's midriff. He met with taut muscles and arms locked around his neck, securing him. He heard his mother thundering down the aisle, screaming, running towards him, until she came to a stop a meter away. Lottie halted her run. The bastard had Sean. She fought for control. If she made any sudden movement, her actions could be fatal. Her heart thumped and banged in her chest, so loud she could hear it pulsing furiously in her ears. Professional. She had to be professional, or God knows what might happen to her son. A knot retched in her ribcage, squeezing like a vice grip. Goosebumps threatened to tear her skin to shreds. A violent fear erupted within her, and she prayed to a god she no longer believed in. She prayed to Adam. She prayed, and then she spoke. "Let the boys go," she said. "Brian." She inched forward as Mike O'Brien recoiled at the mention of his birth name. Still, he held on to Sean and tugged the rope, tearing the last remnants of life from Jason. The boy's head slumped sideways. The rope held fast. Locking eyes with her son, Lottie silently vowed, "A few more minutes, son." "Very clever, Inspector. I have unfinished business here. Do you wish to watch?" O'Brien's voice rose and fell in a sing-song. Lottie fought against the war battling within. She must be calm and logical. Glanced at Kirby. He had drawn his semi-automatic pistol. Too dangerous to use it with the boys captive. She scowled at him. He slipped the gun back into his side holster. Stemming a lurch of nausea as O'Brien's arm tightened around Sean's neck, she wanted to rush forward, to drag her son away from the madness. Dredging up all her training, she calculated her distance from O'Brien. No visible weapon, though she knew the long robe could conceal just about anything. She willed a resolute calmness into her voice. "You don't have to do this, you know," she said. "You are Brian. I know what happened to you in here. It was wrong, but you can make it right. Release them. It's not going to solve anything if you hurt them further." She edged closer.
"Inspector, it will make me feel better if I do what I intend to do." "You cannot stop me," O'Brien said, his voice high and strained,
white knuckles visibly tightening around Sean. He's strong and fit, Lottie reminded herself. She labored to stem the urge to rush him, to grab his steely gray hair and yank it from his head. How can it make you feel better? You're a grown man. These are two helpless children, she pleaded. From the corner of her eye, she saw Kirby circling slowly to the right.
I was a helpless, abandoned child, and no one helped me, O'Brien snarled.
I'll get you help. It's not too late.
Let them go.
He laughed. Lottie flinched as the cruel sound reverberated throughout the acoustically designed chapel. Kirby was almost level with O'Brien on the steps. The laughing continued, uncontrollable, demonic strains to her ears. She needed to silence it. Her son, his face red, eyes streaming. Then she saw the blood seeping from his abdomen. Distraught with anguish for Sean, Lottie recalled what Patrick O'Malley had told her about Brian. Had he really killed a defenseless baby? Had he been instrumental in the death of Fitzy? Why had he killed Sullivan and Brown? What madness lurked, yet to be awakened within his soul? She couldn't find any answers as terror prowled through her veins. She desperately fused her thoughts back to the scene she was witnessing.
Let them go? O'Brien questioned, his voice high and hysterical. Perhaps I will let one go, and allow you to watch as I destroy the other. Who will you choose, Lottie Parker? Who is the diamond and who is the carbon? Will you save your son and let this other boy die before your eyes? What do you say to that, Madam Inspector?
I say you're totally insane. Lottie lost her last thread of control. She stepped forward. O'Brien edged backward, still clutching Sean around the neck. The swish of his cloak fanned the candles lining the altar steps. A small flame caught the bottom of Jason's jeans and began to smoulder.
You can't kill both of them, she said.
Jason could already be dead. He was so still, his face purple, tongue protruding.
Let them go. I promise you I'll help you afterwards.
Struggling for the appearance of outward calm, she called up her years of experience into this one moment.
You know nothing of the torment I've suffered, O'Brien screamed. Don't even try to imagine it.
Keep him talking. Divert his attention away from Kirby.
Why Susan and James? Why did you kill them?
Another step forward.
You think I killed them? Why would I?
His shrill voice filled her ears. She stole a glance at Kirby. He was 5 meters from O'Brien, level with him on the wide step. O'Brien inched backwards, grabbed something from the altar, his cloak flapping open, displaying nakedness beneath, a crisscross of old scars on his chest. The steel of a knife glinted in his hand. Lottie caught a glimpse of the tattoo on his leg, deep and dark. They had the tattoo also. What was it for? She had to stall him. Kirby was getting closer.
God Almighty Cornelius Mohan told us we were tarnished with the blood of the devil, and he had to mark us for life, to keep the demons away. Ha!
A piercing cry went up from him. Lottie recoiled as his hold tightened around Sean's neck.
He invested evil spirits into our souls. It was his way of owning us. He was the devil incarnate.
The voice was a high-pitched, unnatural whine. He pulled Sean upright by the neck. Lottie could see the whites of her son's eyes rolling in his head. She jumped forward, Kirby moving at the same moment. She grabbed for the knife, but O'Brien's hand swooped down and the blade sliced through the padding of her jacket, cutting into her upper arm. Ignoring the pain, adrenaline strengthening her resolve, she continued her assault. Raised her other arm, elbowed the man's throat, pushing him firmly until he released her son. The boy collapsed. Kirby raised his large booted foot and kicked O'Brien square in the chest. O'Brien fell backwards and a whoosh of flame swept up behind him. Quickly she grabbed Sean. Kirby picked up the knife, cut through the rope and pulled Jason from the noose. Lottie lashed out with her foot as O'Brien rose from the fire and connected with his torso. He fell into the candles, his burning cape igniting further as he outstretched his arms, flailing against the blaze. His flesh crackled. Screaming, raw and inhuman sounds, O'Brien battered wildly, fanning the flames. He dragged himself to a kneeling position, stood up in a wave of orange and yellow light, tearing at his burning robe, his hands on fire. His skin was already sizzling, oozing, slipping down his body. He fell back into the inferno. On her knees, consumed with the smell of fried human skin, Lottie dragged Sean along the ground, crawling away from the blaze.
"I didn't kill James and Susan or Angelotti, I didn't!"
the voice from hell screeched as O'Brien twisted and turned, trying to quench his burning flesh.
"Cornelius Mohan, yes, I did that bastard in!"
He screamed in agony and was engulfed in smoke and fire. Kirby had his phone in one hand shouting frenzied commands while hauling a lifeless Jason to his shoulder. Lottie hugged her son to her breast and undid the rope binding him. Kirby slapped wildly, quenching the fire on Jason's jeans. She only moved when Kirby steered them towards the stairs.
"We can't leave him there, like that,"
she said, glancing back at the man dancing around like a wound-up ballerina in a jewellery box of fire. Kirby tightened his grip on her hand.
"Shoot him,"
she shouted.
"He's not worth a waste of a bullet, come on,"
he said. "Now!" Lottie followed Kirby, Jason secure across his wide shoulders, and she clutched Sean around the waist, dragging him up the staircase with her. On the top step she allowed herself a backward glance. The man was ablaze, his skin a melting slime. He sank downwards, his screams dying as the inferno swelled out towards the wooden kneelers. Thick black smoke choked the air. Her son was safe. That's all Lottie could think of in that instant. Her son was safe. She didn't look back again. She heaved Sean along the corridor, down the stairs, through the hall and outside. She dropped to her knees on the frozen steps, her son in her arms. She welcomed the cold air. Coughing up smoke from her lungs, she remained there, statuesque, until the wail of sirens stole the silence of the night. 31st of January, 1976. Sally kept her eyes open all night long. The night of the black moon, Patrick called it. She listened to the nighttime sounds, to the soft breathing of the other girls in her room, to the scratching in the skirting boards and the ceiling. She imagined grotesque shapes dancing in the moonlight, belts and candles swaying toward her and away from her, like some obscene ballet. She heard babies crying in the nursery, but no footsteps hurried to soothe them. They were alone. She was alone. And the night seemed to go on forever. She didn't know what had happened to her baby. She didn't know why Fitzy had died. But she vowed there and then that one day, however long it took, the truth would be revealed. She would remember for the rest of her life. She lay awake as the first light of dawn broke through the window with the moon just a shadow in the sky. Day 9, 7th of January, 2015. Chapter 107. The first orange rays of dawn crested through a snowy horizon beyond the hospital walls while the nurse monitored Sean's vital signs, as she'd done every 20 minutes for the last 5 hours. Contented that her patient was stable, she nodded to Lottie. "The doctor will be here in a minute, but Sean is doing fine." The nurse left. Lottie kissed her son's hand and forehead and gently traced her finger over his eyes, telling him over and over she was sorry. Watching the IFE tube bleeding life into him, she counted each drop as it dripped downwards. 1, 2, 3. Sean's eyelids fluttered. Lottie's internal anger had caused her fingers to linger on his eyes. Removing her hand as if she was scalded, she wondered how much longer she could go on causing her children pain. The door opened. Boyd stood there wearing a navy cotton dressing gown, neatly tied around his narrow waist. His face, still bruised and pale, was grave. Lottie dipped her head and he was at her side.
"You shouldn't be in here. They'll throw you out," she said.
"Let them," he said, and gently kissed the top of her head. "Ugh, smoke. Feck off, Boyd," she sobbed.
"It's okay to cry,"
he rubbed her shoulder.
"No, it's not. I failed him. Failed my son, my family. Jason, too."
"You saved Sean."
"Yeah,"
she said, unable to screen the scorn from her voice. "But what about Jason?"
"I should have figured it out sooner."
He didn't answer. She pushed him away.
"You look terrible," she said.
"So do you," he said, pointing to the wound on her arm. "The murderer. Did he have a bruise and a limp?"
"He does now.
You better go." "I'm getting out of here anyway."
"What?"
"You've too much to handle and I'm here like a spare prick watching soaps on the television. You need me." She didn't object. She needed Boyd, even if he was like something out of The Walking Dead. As the door closed behind Boyd, Lottie let her fingers linger for a moment on her son's face before the nurse returned with the doctor and hustled her out. Superintendent Corrigan paced the corridor, Lynch and Kirby behind him. No sign of Boyd.
"Inspector Parker," Corrigan said, clamping a hand on her shoulder.
Lottie didn't know what to say, so she said nothing.
"The bastard is barely alive. Needs to go to the specialist burns unit in Dublin. He'll have to wait until this snowstorm abates. Air ambulances are grounded," he said.
"He's still alive?"
Lottie asked incredulously.
"Prognosis is not good. 80% burns."
"Good," Lottie said. "And St. Angela's?" She was avoiding the question she knew she must ask.
"The fire was contained to the chapel. We'll seal it off as a crime scene when the fire crew are done."
"Jason?"
she asked eventually.
"You know you were too late."
Corrigan shook his head.
"Feckin' shit luck."
Lottie swayed. She'd already known Jason was dead. Just needed it confirmed.
"At least we have our murderer," Corrigan said.
"I'm not so sure,"
she said hesitantly. Hadn't O'Brien told her he didn't kill Susan or James or indeed Angelotti? He had no reason to lie, especially as he admitted to killing Father Cornelius Mohan. Kirby steadied her as the Ricards appeared at the other end of the corridor. Corrigan moved toward them. Tom Ricard stared straight through her before taking Corrigan's sympathetic handshake. Lottie allowed Kirby to steer her in the opposite direction.
"Can I have a word, boss?"
Kirby said. Leaning against the wall, Lottie nodded.
"I know this isn't a great time, but I have to tell you," he began.
"Spit it out, Kirby."
"Moroni, the journalist."
"Go on." Somehow she knew what he was going to say.
"That stuff he reported about James Brown being a paedophile. Well, I might have said something I shouldn't have."
"Oh, Jesus, Kirby. What did you say?"
"Moroni overheard a conversation about what we found in Brown's house. He rang me for confirmation. We were up to our necks in reports and stuff,
so I might have agreed with what he said to get him off the phone.
Lottie shook her head. At least now she knew the source of Moroni's information. She had been wrong to suspect it might have been Lynch. Probably a genuine mistake on Kirby's part. At least she hoped so. Deciding to let it go, she said, "Don't let it happen again." Kirby exhaled and tapped his pocket for a cigar.
"Thanks, boss."
"And you did well with O'Brien." It was the closest she could come to a compliment in the circumstances. She watched Kirby stroll off down the corridor as Lynch joined her.
"Sean, how's he doing?"
she asked as they walked.
"He'll recover, in time," Lottie said.
Tom Ricard's eyes. She didn't want to see that look again any time soon. She'd found his son, like she said she would, but she failed him in the worst possible way. Lynch said, "Kids always turn out fine."
"And what the hell does any of us know about it?"
Lottie muttered. She kept on walking.
Chapter 108. Rounding the corner, she bumped into Father Joe standing at the nurse's station.
"You're a sight for sore eyes," he said, flicking a strand of hair from his brow, breaking into a sad smile. But Lottie read sorrow in his eyes.
"Welcome to my world," she thought.
"Joe." He was holding a bulky A4-sized envelope. Tiredness creased his face like crumpled linen.
"What are you doing back home?" she asked.
"How's Sean?" he asked, ignoring her question.
"Good," she said.
"No, not good. God, I don't know."
"I'm sorry, Lottie."
"Everyone is sorry."
"What good is sorry?"
"I'll come back later."
"Don't bother," she cried.
"I don't want to see you again. My son almost died, and it's all my fault."
"Nothing I say can make any difference at the moment," he said, lowering his head.
"Then why are you still here?"
He handed her the envelope.
"I paid a visit to Father Angelotti's office. I got this."
"What is it?"
She turned the envelope over in her hand, still bristling.
"Look at the return address.
James Brown."
"He sent this to Father Angelotti?"
She noticed the postmark. "December 30th. The day he died." She questioned with her eyes.
"But Father Angelotti was dead by then."
"Brown mustn't have known that."
"I don't understand."
"All I know is Father Angelotti's staff were getting ready to return it, so I volunteered to take it with me. I caught the next flight home." He took a sheaf of papers from his inside coat pocket and handed them to her. Lottie arched an eyebrow.
"What are these?"
"I went back to Father Umberto's place,
looked through the records again,
and found more information that might be of interest to you."
"I haven't time for all this now," she said, leaning against the wall.
"I know," he said, his shoulders drooping. He shoved his hands into his pockets, turned and walked down the cluttered corridor, leaving her standing alone. She watched him until he disappeared behind the closing elevator doors. Her anger evaporated. In its place, an intense loneliness settled.
Chapter 109.
"What's in the envelope?"
Boyd leaned against the wall outside Sean's door, fully dressed, looking like a corpse.
"What the hell? Boyd, are you serious?"
"You need help, and I'm it."
"You're half dead,"
Lottie said. "Go back to your room. I have the team."
"The envelope," he repeated.
"I haven't opened it yet." She turned it over in her hand. "James Brown posted this to Father Angelotti. Joe brought it from Rome."
"Joe? How cozy."
"Boyd?"
"What?"
"Don't start."
"I've missed you, Lottie," Boyd said. I've missed you too, you daft man, and now I need to check on Sean. Voices echoed from the elevator. Katie and Chloe ran forward, tears streaming, arms outstretched. Rose Fitzpatrick hurried up behind them. Lottie smiled a weary thank you to her mother. Her family, bruised and damaged but complete. With Sean awake at last and comfortable, his sisters either side of the bed holding his hands, Lottie could contain herself no longer. She tore open the envelope and read James Brown's words. They jumbled up inside her, flitting about like an image from Alice in Wonderland's Mad Tea Party, then merged into a cohesive picture without the Mad Hatter. Now she had the full story, scripted in Time's New Roman, imprinted firmly in the forefront of her mind. She had to talk to Patrick O'Malley again, before it was too late. Chapter 110. She should really be with her son and the girls, but her mother told her to do what she had to do, then come back. Sitting at her desk, Lottie felt totally at odds with herself, but at least her son was safe with his granny entrenched in his room, taking control as usual. But for once, she was glad of her mother's help. Conflicted though she was, Lottie knew she had to end this case. Afterwards, she would make the space to spend time with her children. Sean needed her, Katie needed her, and even Chloe, in her own obstinate way, needed her. As for Rose Fitzpatrick, Lottie knew her mother was a survivor, with or without her. For the first time, she acknowledged the grief and trauma her mother had endured. It couldn't have been easy for her. She had battled through it all. Now she must do the same. Boyd dropped a Happy Meal on her desk.
"Lunchtime," he said.
Lottie glanced at the clock. So it was. She yawned and couldn't remember when she'd last eaten or slept. A false energy was keeping her going, so she didn't stop to think about it. She read through the copies Father Joe had given her. "Boyd, I think I know how Derek Hart, James Brown's lover, became involved in all this." He sat on the edge of her desk. She welcomed his easy familiarity, and at the same time she hoped he wouldn't keel over.
"Right, Sherlock," he said.
"Explain." "He's a wrong number."
"You can say that again."
"Seriously, Boyd, look at this." She pointed to an entry on one of the ledger pages. "The reference numbers attached to Susan Sullivan is AA113. She lifted up another copy. "So look at the records for the babies and check the reference AA113. Boyd scanned the page and found the number. It says Derek Hart. But that number was changed.
"How do you know?"
"Look at it carefully. You can see where the ink was rubbed away and a 3 put in place of a 5. I believe this was changed intentionally. Someone didn't want the true identity of Susan Sullivan's child discovered." "So, Hart wasn't Susan Sullivan's offspring after all," Boyd said.
"Looking at it, I can understand how Father Angelotti made his mistake.
But who is her child?"
Lottie pointed to the correct reference number, and Boyd stared, his jaw dropping.
"Are you serious?" he asked.
"Unless someone tampered with the other numbers, I'm very serious."
Lottie shook her head wistfully. "It's so sad."
"Does he know?" Boyd asked.
"I don't think so."
Boyd rubbed his hand over his scarred neck and said, "So all these people were killed to keep this fact a secret?"
"That's part of it."
"What's the rest of it?" Lottie pulled the old file out of her bag. She picked up the photograph of the young boy with a wry smile, freckled nose and crooked shirt collar. "This is the other reason."
"The missing kid?" Boyd asked.
"I think so."
"Are you going to wait until I go on bended knees to beg for the answers?"
Lottie smiled. She had really missed Boyd.
His mother reported him missing in early 1976, having put him in St. Angela's months earlier. The church authorities branded him a runaway. He was never found. That was enough information for Boyd for now, she thought. So what does James Brown's information confirm? James Brown and others witnessed a murder in St. Angela's, perpetrated by Father Cornelius Mohan, aided and abetted by Brian. And when James and Susan threatened to expose it, they were murdered to keep the fact buried. Okay, let me get this straight. Mike O'Brien, originally called Brian, was coerced by Father Conn to take part in some sick ritual which resulted in the death of a boy nearly 40 years ago. Yes, Lottie said. So who was the kid in the photo? Boyd asked. Not now, Boyd. Lottie, I've read the file. Then why ask stupid questions? Let's talk to Patrick O'Malley, Lottie said, closing the file. She shoved it back into her bag. But we know O'Brien was the murdering bastard, Boyd said, once again rubbing the scars on his throat. He only admitted to killing Father Conn. Yes, and he half killed me too. He didn't admit to that, did he? No. But I believe someone else murdered Father Angelotti, Susan Sullivan and James Brown. I'm lost now, Lottie. Lynch rushed into the office, hair loose, flying around her face. We looked everywhere. There's not a sign of O'Malley. He can't just disappear, Lottie said. He's out there somewhere. She turned to Boyd. Think, where would O'Malley go? His past has come back to haunt him. Where would a tormented soul go? Back to the source of his torment? Asked Boyd. Lottie sprang out of the chair, wrapped her arms around him and kissed his cheek. You're right. Come on. If you say so, he said with a grimace. Next time you hug me, mind my wounds. Next time, she winked at him. I'll drive. She checked in with her mother at the hospital. Sean was doing fine. Dumping the Happy Meal in the bin, Lottie followed her team out the door. Chapter 111. In daylight, St. Angela's had lost its sinister ambience. It was only a rambling old building with doors and windows. But Lottie knew it shielded the secrets of horrific brutality behind its concrete and stone. She'd read the insanity in Cornelius Mohan's faded notebook and followed the story in James Brown's envelope. She discovered the cover-up in the Rome ledgers and witnessed its legacy reincarnated last night. For what? Torn lives and damaged souls. Bodies buried, but the living carrying the burden. That's how she'd felt at Adam's grave a few short years ago. Now she fully understood what she'd been thinking then, and a crushing sadness settled in her heart. Taking a deep breath, she walked over to the figure leaning against a scarred, bare tree. They did a good job saving the rest of it, Father Joe said, nodding toward the building. The site was almost deserted. The fire crews had rolled up their hoses, slid ladders on top of truck roofs, and departed from the site. A couple of Gardaí manned fluttering crime scene tapes. Burning stench hung in the air, but the smoke was gone, and smouldering embers remained. The chapel walls were singed black, windows shattered, the roof caved in. But the main structure of St. Angela's endured, unscathed. Pity the whole place didn't burn to the ground, he added. What are you doing here? Lottie pulled down her hood to get a better look at him. I felt drawn to it. After all the lies. Joe, she began. Don't. Lottie, don't say anything. He pushed away from the tree. She placed her hand on his arm. Did you see any sign of a vagrant? Patrick O'Malley. We're looking for him. Just the place for vagrancy, he said. Bishop Connor is nosing around. Lottie beckoned to Boyd. Lynch and Kirby brought up the rear. Bishop Connor is here, she said. O'Malley must be too. Spread out and look for them, she said. Not you, Boyd. You look like you're about to faint. I'm fine, he said, averting his eyes from Lottie holding on to the priest's sleeve. She dropped her hand, shrugged her shoulders, and headed into the walled, snow-covered orchard outside the cordoned-off area. Boyd trudged behind her, Father Joe at his side. Lynch and Kirby crossed the frozen lawn and hurried left around the back of St. Angela's. It was Lottie's first time inside the small orchard enclosure. In the lifeless winter it was barren, trees shredded bare, the ground swathed in a white sheet of purity. She truly believed there was nothing pure in this place. Evil stalked every crevice in its walls, and bodies lay uneasy in unmarked graves. She glanced upwards at the window, where three sets of terrified eyes had witnessed atrocities no child should have to observe or comprehend. Shadows spread at the base of the trees, and the sun struggled to find its place low in the grey afternoon sky. At the furthest corner of the orchard, she saw them. Two figures. Silhouetted marionettes twirling around each other, leaving streaked snow in their wake. She put a finger to her lips and inched forward. The puppets ceased their dancing, interrupted by birds fleeing as a flock from the branches. O'Malley swung round and looked directly into her eyes. Blood poured from his cheek, and a blue nylon rope lay useless around his neck. Bishop Terence Connor turned slowly and dropped the other end of the rope. "It's all over, Bishop Connor," Lottie said. She wondered at his audacity to attempt committing a crime meters from Gardaí. He must surely be mad.
"Over," Bishop Connor shouted. "Over. Not yet."
He stood with his arms reaching to the heavens.
"It is over when my God tells me."
"You're finished," Father Joe stepped up beside Lottie.
"You,"
the bishop exploded, pointing his finger towards the priest.
"You are the cause of this."
"Me?" "You're insane," Father Joe said, voicing Lottie's thoughts.
"All those people are dead. For what? To cover up St. Angela's abusive past?"
He opened his hands, palms upwards.
"How could your God allow this?" "My God. He is your God too." "That's where you're wrong."
Father Joe tore his clerical collar from his neck and flung it into the snow, where it blended with the whiteness.
"Blasphemy. I did all this for you," Connor roared.
O'Malley started toward him. Lottie silently urged him to move away from Connor. She remained by Father Joe's side. Boyd edged forward, nearer to O'Malley. The vagrant knelt in the deep snow, bloodied and unmoving.
"She was your mother, you know,"
Bishop Connor said, a smile slowly creasing his face in a sinister mask.
"Susan Sullivan."
Father Joe lurched forward, hands outstretched to grab the other man's throat.
"You're the lowest of the low," he screamed.
Lottie grabbed the tail of his coat before he touched Connor.
"Susan Sullivan,"
Bishop Connor repeated, taking a step backwards.
"Yes, Joe, you are her son.
She never found out. I sent the records away to Rome, having first altered them. I put out a false trail. Father Angelotti helped there, unwittingly, I might add. Once that Susan Sullivan started her meddling, I knew she would stop at nothing to uncover the truth. I only wanted to protect you."
"You're lying,"
Father Joe cried. Lottie's heart shattered into little pieces for him,
The only time he had had contact with his mother was the day he was born and the day she died when he had administered the last rites as she lay at his feet.
You are the bastard son of a paedophile priest and a girl barely out of childhood. Liar,
Father Joe whispered, shaking his head, trying to make the vision disappear, but Lottie knew it would remain with him forever. I would have known by my birth certificate if I was adopted. His voice was broken, a million pieces of shattered glass.
Back then, Connor sneered, the nuns, Father Con and I, we made sure there was no time wasting with adoption certificates. With the babies we dealt with, their birth certificates appeared to be the genuine article, but we maintained details of their original births in ledgers.
He tried to move forward, but his feet sank deeper into the snow.
You changed the reference numbers, Lottie said. Why?
Because I could. And because Susan Sullivan wanted to know who and where her bastard child was. I had to protect him.
Why kill Father Angelotti?
Lottie asked, stalling him.
Because Angelotti was going to reveal the truth once he'd discovered his mistake. He had realized the records had been changed, so he organized a meeting with Brown to get him to talk to Susan. Of course I offered to drive him to see how things would pan out. Brown never showed, and I took my chance. I had hoped Brown would get the blame. Unfortunately, the weather didn't help there.
Father Joe shook his head again. I can't believe what I'm hearing.
It's a fact. I lived my life for you. I spared you in St. Angela's all those years ago. I placed you with a good family, spent my life covering up for the church.
And you covered up a boy's murder, Lottie said.
I did what I had to do, Bishop Connor said.
Suddenly his shoulders drooped. Lottie knew he had lost his fight.
Why kill Susan and James? She asked.
They were blackmailing me. Wanted to expose the secrets I'd worked all my life to keep buried. I had to stop them. I couldn't afford it anymore.
He laughed cynically.
If I had known Susan Sullivan was already dying of cancer, perhaps none of this would have been necessary.
Convinced she was staring into the eyes of the devil himself, Lottie said, you concealed the abuse of children. You moved Father Cornelius Mohan around, allowing him to commit further abuse in new parishes. Babies, never making it out the door of this place, throwing them into unmarked graves. A young boy beaten to death behind these walls and unceremoniously buried here. She waved her hands around the enclosure. Somewhere.
You can't prove anything.
His eyes challenged her. Lottie held his stare, counted to 19 before he looked away. Lynch and Kirby, weapons drawn unnecessarily, took up positions along the wall behind the bishop and O'Malley.
And why does one boy's death matter so much to you, Inspector Parker?
It matters to everyone, Father Joe said.
Especially to those you murder to keep things secret.
Lottie pulled at his sleeve to shut him up.
You are a discredit to the collar you wear, Bishop Connor spat. No, I'm not,
Father Joe said.
But you are.
He inched forward. Lottie pulled him back. O'Malley broke from Boyd's grip, leaped upwards and lunged at Connor's shoulders, knocking him into the snow. Lottie hauled up Connor as Boyd grabbed O'Malley.
I saw you with my own eyes,
O'Malley said, blood spluttering from his mouth.
From those windows up there. Me and Susan and James. We saw you throw poor Fitzy in a hole under a tree.
He pointed wildly around the orchard.
And you'd been in the chapel.
We'd seen you do nothing when he screamed and cried. Brian and Father Con beat him until he was stripped bare of his skin. And what did you do?
Absolutely nothing. You could have stopped it.
Boyd dragged O'Malley away from his tormentor.
You murdering bastard!
O'Malley shouted at Connor.
But you didn't get me!
Lottie snapped the handcuffs on Connor. All his arrogance had disappeared, leaving a dead blackness in his eyes. My brother, she whispered in his ear. Eddie Fitzpatrick. What did you do to him?
Buried him. What else could I do with his broken body?
He scanned the orchard with a swift head movement.
Here. Somewhere here.
Lottie slapped him hard across the face.
He didn't flinch.
If anything, his eyes dimmed, murky shadows clouding them over.
Your family abandoned that boy, he sneered. Your father shot himself with a bullet through his mouth. Your mother threw a grieving 10-year-old behind these walls and walked away, and you... You...
I was 4,
Lottie murmured.
And why did your mother do that? The lovely, upstanding Catholic Rose Fitzpatrick. I'll tell you why. Because your brother was a thieving, good-for-nothing tearaway. And the widow couldn't stand the added shame of the boy ruining her life. So she had him locked away.
Shut up!
Lottie cried.
Ask her! You ask her!
Lottie's tears dampened her cheeks, and a soft flutter of snow fell to earth. His words had hammered home things never spoken aloud in her family. Things her mother should have told her. And she still wasn't sure if she'd found what she had lost all those years ago. Boyd's hand slipped into hers. Epilogue, 30th of January 2015. Charlotte Bronte, that's who you were called after.
I know, Mother, Lottie said. You told me numerous times. Before this, she couldn't get her mother to talk about her brother or her father. Now she couldn't shut her up. Rose had explained to Lottie that Eddie was an awful handful after their father committed suicide. She had despaired of what to do about him until, on the advice of the parish priest, she placed him in the care of St. Angela's for 6 months, and then he disappeared. And poor Eddie, we called him after.
Edward Rochester, Jane Eyre, Lottie said.
I know.
But she didn't know anything anymore. The digger operator held up his hand and switched off the machine. It was getting dark and Lottie didn't know if he'd found something or was quitting for the night. She moved away from her mother, leaving her standing with Chloe. Katie was at home minding Sean. They were not doing too well, either of them. The Ricards had buried Jason 5 days after he died, in a private ceremony. None of Lottie's family were there. The Ricards didn't want to see Katie. The girl couldn't understand it. Lottie could. Boyd had bought Sean a PlayStation 4. It was still in its box, unopened. She'd got him a new hurling kit. He'd thrown it under his bed. Now she was struggling to keep her family intact. Her children needed her more than any time since they'd buried their father. They were son and daughters, sisters and brother. Lottie knew how the hasty action of a mother could change that dynamic forever, and she couldn't afford to make a mistake, not where her children were concerned. In her job, she still didn't know if there would be any disciplinary action regarding her flight to Rome and her handling of the murder investigations. Superintendent Corrigan was reluctant to apologize for his actions in shielding the bishop and was avoiding her. But for now, she was on paid leave. Work could wait. The sky leached grey into black, and night was descending before the day had succeeded in fulfilling itself. Lottie felt the same. A spotlight directed a shaft of light into the 3-foot-deep hole. She knew it was time. The new moon glinted in the dark. The black moon, Maybe the bad omens were behind them. Maybe not. She stood on the edge of an abyss, wondering where she would find the inner strength to walk away. But Lottie Parker never walked away. She noticed Father Joe standing at the wall, by the archway, jeans and a black polo neck sweater under his big jacket. He was taking a sabbatical. His whole life, he had unknowingly lived a lie, and now he grieved for his dead birth mother, whom he had never known. He looked lost, a deep sadness shading his eyes. Lottie waved, then dropped her hand as he walked away. Suffering for the secrets of others. This reminded her again of her own family secret which this case had awakened. Her brother's yellowing, missing persons file in her drawer. She could never again deny it. And she was proud of his heroism. O'Malley had told a story, painting Fitzy's, her own brother's time in St. Angela's in big, bold colours. Her mother had cried for days. Lottie sensed Boyd falling into step beside her. She felt his hand resting on the small of her back, soft and comforting. "It will only be bones. You don't have to look, Lottie." She glanced up at the dark windows. Then she walked closer to the unmarked grave beneath the bare apple tree, highlighted by the radiance of the crescent moon. "Oh, but I do," Lottie said, peering over the mound of clay. "I do." This has been The Missing Ones, written by Patricia Gibney, narrated by Michelle Moran. Copyright 2017 by Patricia Gibney. Production copyright 2017 by Bookature.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.